getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer,
to be honest opinion. He's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those listening live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On this Saturday morning, alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we're going to take you all around the hockey world. It's been an absolutely busy week since the draft last Saturday in Sunrise, Florida, and it's been an absolutely busy week since free agency opened on Canada Day.
Dude, that was a good open, I gotta tell you.
Thank you. Along those same lines...
Good work by Corey there to help us out.
That's right. Along those same lines, I must say it's a happy 4th of July to our American audience listening south of the border, and any Americans who may be here, of course, in Winnipeg. A happy Independence Day, a happy 4th of July to you and your family. Gentlemen, it is good to see you both. How are you doing on this Saturday morning?
Good morning, boys. It's nice to be here. Nice to be back in the studio. It was a fun draft last week, but it's fun to be back talking hockey with you guys.
Ezzy, how was the draft?
It was really fun, Richie. It was a little hectic, a lot of trades going on, but there was obviously the two first-round picks for the Jets, and a lot of action going on both days, so it was a good time, and it doesn't hurt that it was down by the beach, so... It was a fully enjoyable time.
Yeah, next, I hear you're actually petitioning that next time you are hoping to do the draft right on the beach itself, so you can just do the draft in your bathing suit.
Drew, I'm pretty sure that there was a trade of the draft, and suddenly you're still here.
Yeah, it's funny.
If nobody informs me, I'm allowed to still show up, I think is the rule and how it works. Anyways, let's get into the Winnipeg Jets activities in the last few days with free agency having opened on Canada Day, of course. The Jets, not so much active in terms of acquiring new players. Well, it depends. Is Alex Burmistrov a new player at this point in time? I guess that's really the big question for a part of this Jets offseason is, what Alex Burmistrov are they acquiring after they signed him to a two-year, $3.1 million contract? He spent, of course, the last 2 years in the KHL. Who is Alex Burmistrov now? That's a real big question for the Jets this offseason.
Well, he's a new player in the sense that he has been in the KHL for the last 2 years. But the big signings are obviously Drew Stafford and Alexander Burmistrov, and there's some depth signings when you go down the line with Adam Pardy and Matt Halaschuk. And then yesterday you had Andrew McWilliams signing and a few others. But I think, a lot of Jets fans were a little bit upset that Michael Frolik went to the Calgary Flames, and rightfully so. He was a big part of the team for the last 2 years. But when you're talking about Alexander Burmistrov, you're basically looking at a replacement for what Michael Frolik does. And I'm not saying that Alexander Burmistrov steps in next year and does all of the things that Michael Frolik does, because obviously Michael Frolik was that type of Swiss Army knife player, Richie, that could play on the first line, second line, third line, kill penalties, play on the power play, do everything, really. But Alexander Burmistrov has that two-way element to his game. And whether you put him on the third line at center, third line wing, fourth line center, fourth line wing, he's going to most likely start off in the bottom six quite simply because there are other players above him on the depth chart. So in that sense, it is a new signing. And it's a little bit unknown what Alexander Burmistrov is going to bring right away. We've seen him a couple of years in Winnipeg and 1 year at Atlanta, but I think there's no reason to believe why he can't be a contributor to this team, especially with the coaching change, Paul Maurice going to talk to him, if you remember, at the World Championships. And I know there was a little speculation that maybe Burmistrov was going to get traded, but it's pretty clear from what Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice have said that he's going to be a part of the team next year. And quite frankly, I think he deserves it. I think, it's yet to be seen if his attitude has completely changed, but all indications are that he's ready to come back and play in the NHL and be a contributor and really take whatever role is given to him at this point.
He's a useful player. He's a good player. I mean, is he worthy of a top 10 NHL draft pick? Well, probably not at the end of the day, but the Jets don't need that from him now. They've had a ton of top 10, 15 picks. They need him to be, as you pointed out, to be a serviceable NHL player, to replace a lot of what Frolik brought to the table. Frolik was a right winger, and we assume Burmistrov will play center or left wing. But at the same time, the production hole in the roster needs to be filled, and Burmistrov is capable of contributing I don't know if he can contribute the numbers that Frolik did last year, but he's capable of contributing at a reasonable level. And depending on opportunity, may be able to get into the area of what Frolik did last year. So, you know, what Bremistra brings to the table when we saw him last is smart player, solid, really good defensively for a young player.
Mm-hmm.
Can be trusted. Wasn't great on faceoffs. Strong on the puck. Pretty conscious of where he was on the ice. Overhandling the puck. Not utilizing his teammates enough. Probably not putting the puck in net as much as he ought to have, considering the chances that he had. And a guy who, it appeared, but when he left, had a sense of entitlement. So if he brings those skills to the table and drops a sense of entitlement, you have a pretty solid player, a young player, at a reasonable clip.
Yeah, the contract of the $1.55 million per season for the salary cap hit. I mean, it's a guy with no leverage, as you know, I heard you and Rick talking about on Wednesday. Yeah, no leverage. I think both sides did fine on the contract. I mean, the Jets probably could have, you know, tightened the screws on him a little bit more if they wanted to, but
the 2 years gives them what they wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I think that both sides probably have to be perfectly, you know, consider it to be a perfectly reasonable contract.
And when you look at what Michael Frolik was asking and what he got, whether the Jets were offering a little bit more, which it sounds like they were, if you look at it, Alexander Burmistrov is younger and comes at a third of the price that, or a quarter of the price, whatever it is, that Michael Frolik was going to come in at. And I don't think to me, you know, Michael Frolik is okay at that salary if it's for 2 or 3 years. When you're paying him 5 years and his skills are most likely going to decrease, and he's never been a 60-point guy. I mean, he's a 35, 45-point guy, which when he brings his defensive game and his penalty killing and power play abilities, he's a good player. But I think really what you're seeing since the last lockout is the fringe second liner, really good third line player, gets between $4 and $5 million a year and is often overpaid. If you look at a lot of the players were bought out, Cody Hodgson, P.A. Parenteau, I want to throw Mike Richards in there as well. Those are guys that right now are ideally third liners on a okay team, or even fourth line guys. P.A. Parenteau couldn't get into the lineup in Montreal. Cody Hodgson was a complete bust in Buffalo after they thought he was going to be their second line center.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're seeing. And a guy like Michael Frolik, do you want to pay him? I think when Drew Stafford signed for 2 years, the writing was on the wall. I never thought Frolik was signing. You can go back 2-3 months. I thought Frolik was never coming back to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not saying, you know, I told you so, but I'm just saying I thought that it was
You were reading the tea leaves.
Reading the tea leaves and the fact that he signed the one-year deal, right, Richie? I love the Drew Stafford signing. You know, just quickly here, I think.
Well, let's talk about the Drew Stafford signing. Two years, $8.7 million, salary cap hit of 4.35 per season.
Yep.
You know, most people, I think, were probably surprised at the length of the contract being so short, being only that two-year deal.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised, Drew. I thought it was going to come in at 3 or 4 years. 5 years, Richie, probably would have been the most. But it looks like that term worked more. Maybe he was asking for a little bit more, Rich, if they gave him, you know, the extra couple years, because you hear that Drew Stafford had some other offers. But I have no problem with it, because it really works for both sides. It doesn't tie Drew Stafford up too much. And he's not a player that's, you know, in his earlier 20s. I mean, he's 29, 30 years old, right?
Yeah, he'll be 30 in October.
Right, so you could say that, you know, maybe his best offensive totals are probably behind him, or they're, you know what you're getting. So I don't have any problem with the number of years. I like the signing because he worked really well with Scheifele and Wheeler on that second line, and he provides those leadership qualities. We heard Chevy talk about that. So I'm a little bit surprised, but I don't really think that's a bad thing for the Jets.
The contract for the Jets' perspective is a great contract. To get him for 2 years is really getting no risk. If you have a down year, which is possible, you have a down year, you can possibly trade him with another year in his deal. I don't think he has a no move, right, Drew? As far as I know,
there's no trade or no move clause involved.
You have a guy who, you know, you, as he mentioned, complimented Wheeler and Scheifele well, was able to play right and left wing, can score first and foremost, and that's what this team needs, scorers. And, you know, it costs that much. That's a reasonable hit, and the term is reasonable. I mean, from Stafford's perspective, I wonder why he signed for 2 years and settle for that number. Maybe he prefers 4.35 in 2 years rather than, you know, $4 million for 12 years, or
$4 million for 3 years.
Sorry, $4 million per year for 3 years, yeah. for $12 million total. That's what I mean. So that was a little bit peculiar, but at the end of the day, I thought the Jets did well on that one.
Yeah,
clearly, I mean, just quickly, clearly Shevelidze, and I mentioned this on Wednesday with Rick. Clearly, Shevelidze loves the 2 year contract. Bermistrov, Stafford, Peluso, Hutchinson, because he's risk averse, and that is like your perfect risk-averse contract, right? You're not doing the year. You're not doing too long, 3-4. You're getting your 2 years. You can see you reevaluate at that time. And that seems to be his calling card.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly astute point you make right there. Unfortunately, you know, he won't be able to do the 2 year contracts coming up with some of the guys who are he's negotiating with right now. You hear that the, you know,
but the
contract.
The big guys he gives the long term, yeah. But I'm talking those.
Yeah, the tweener
young
guys.
Young guys are next level, right? Like, that's what he likes to do.
I bet he doesn't want to do 2 year deals with Scheifele and Trouba when they come up.
I'm sure he won't. Yeah.
That has been something we've seen quite a bit.
You never know with a bridge or one of the guys. You never know. Things change.
Yeah.
I would have thought for sure there's no chance they signed Trouba to a bridge at the beginning of last year. Near the end of last year, you never know.
Yeah, it's sort of. Yeah, wasn't as great at the end of last year as he was at the beginning of last year.
You don't know how, you know, gets to prove that point kind of thing.
Fair enough, but you're right.
I mean, I'm not saying that I was still leading with Ezzy there in terms of it being a longer term one, but that option is there, and we'll see.
In addition to the Stafford and the Bermistrov signing, those ones got the majority of the headlines. There were some depth signings. Adam Pardy got back for 1 year, $1 million. Matt Hauschuk on a two-way deal, 1 year, $750,000. And then you got a couple of guys who are signed. You know, you got Matt Frazier, Patrice Cormier. Matt Frazier coming new to the organization. Yep. Cormier has been here for a while, of course. Andrew McWilliam coming on a two-way contract as well, coming from the Leafs organization. Start with the Pardy one. He's sort of an effective player for the Jets, gets a little bit of a raise. There's, again, no risk on a one-year, $1 million contract, really.
Yeah, as it stands, Adam Pardy is the seventh or eighth defenseman, but as we know, injuries happen throughout the season. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that stepped in and played pretty well in the 10, 12 minutes that he played, and he even played left wing a few times. So it's nice to see him get a contract. I thought he was one of those great character guys for the team. Throws in the little offense, as we know, at the Pardy dangle. Mm-hmm. But you know what you're going to get: solid, stay at home, physical. He can be mean at times, so it's nice to see him get the contract. You know, as far as these other signings, you know, throw in Matt Hauschuk, Matt Frazier, these guys, Cormier, unfortunately, hasn't had much success at the NHL level, and Hauschuk has been kind of that guy who's filled in. But really, you're looking at three guys that are really competing for a fourth line spot. If the Jets don't sign someone right now. Mm-hmm. You're essentially looking at a situation where you're going to have several rookies in the lineup. I mean, as it stands right now, it's probably going to be something like a Bermistrov Ehlers second line. And so you can really throw in Andrew Kopp there right now. I still think that Andrew Kopp isn't a given to start the year with the Jets. I'm not saying that he won't play with the Jets, but I still think, you know, you hear Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun talking about the Jets were potentially an option for Andrew Desjardins. So I still think without Jim Slater signed, Desjardins, of course, re-signed
in Chicago. Yeah.
Chicago. He was on the fourth line of the Chicago Blackhawks during their cup run, if you didn't know that. So I still think that it's not out of the realm that Jim Slater's coming back, but they're looking at other players there to fill that fourth line center role. I still think they want a veteran fourth line center in there as opposed to Andrew Kopp, who has a lot of potential, but he's only played one NHL game, which doesn't really count because it was the last game of the year. And I think they'd ideally like to give him a year or two of seasoning in the AHL. So, you know, as far as, you know, Matt Frazier, a guy that's played with Boston and
Edmonton,
he's a guy, you know, he's a guy who can bang around out there. He can chip in a few goals. You know, he's a guy, though, that he has a spot open for him on the fourth line if he can win it. And that's why he got the two-way deal. But there's some spots open.
There certainly are some spots open. I mean, it's certainly, and it would be of no surprise, you know, that, you know, the flurry of July 1st and July 2nd has sort of passed us now. Everybody can sort of take a step back, look at the marketplace again, and then, you know, evaluate how you go forward. And there's probably going to be some deals available. I mean, I thought for the first time, I don't know, in a decade maybe, general managers were restrained on July 1st. I mean, I can't believe it.
Salary cap is a big part of that.
Obviously, salary cap's a big issue. But, I mean, in years past, they've still gone hog wild and made, you know, contract signings that left us chuckling.
That's
and
true.
And there really weren't any that were, I mean, the Andre Sequeira deal was the longest of them all. And you might not love it, but, you know,
For Edmonton, that's a good signing.
For Edmonton, you need him, and he's effective, and he's an upgrade. You might not love the $5.5 million. We'll talk about it more next segment. But on a whole, I thought general managers were like, no, you know.
Well, I think the games, the managers are getting smarter, and I think the cap is not moving, and I think the Canadian dollar is scaring people for next year's cap, too.
That's a good point, Richie. The salary cap didn't go up much, so GMs had no choice but to be smart.
And the dollar wasn't, I mean, it was based on last year, right?
Yeah,
the dollar wasn't there this year.
Well, the dollar they're talking about 70-cent dollar, you know, coming up.
Well, what does that do to revenues? Does the cap go down next year?
It's possible. It's not unheard of, and that's why I think general. But I mean, we know all this. But
if there's
still,
expansion, does it continue to go down?
You know, the expansion money doesn't factor into hockey related revenue with regard to the salary cap. But I mean, even with all that, we still see we've seen general managers make boneheaded
decisions.
Because
remember, if you add two more teams, the hockey. The money, the TV revenue doesn't increase as far as I'm aware. There's no trigger clauses for an increase in TV money. So you're spreading around more teams.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice windfall for the owners in that, the 30 owners will say they'll get, $1 billion each, but it's not related to anything else besides just an outlier where each team gets, each owner gets $30 million from the league.
Yeah, guys, to recap what the Jets did, I like what the Jets did, by the way.
They didn't really do too much.
Well,
To me, I'm going to quickly interrupt as I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, they signed Stafford, they signed Burmistrov, and they signed depth players.
Right.
So in that sense, and they lost Frolik, so I wasn't expecting anything more except for the one thing that I still think is needed for the Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff is to sign a bottom six forward. So you're talking about a Curtis Glenn Cross, a Kyle Brodziak, somebody like that, one of these UFAs that's left. You got to get a veteran in there because I don't think you can have Nikolai Ehlers, Andrew Kopp, Joel Armia, three rookie forwards in your bottom six.
I agree with you.
I've said that all along. I know everybody thinks.
Brodziak went to St. Louis for the record.
Oh, pardon me. I didn't know that. Yeah. That must have been yesterday.
I think it was yesterday for 1 year and $900,000.
Someone of that ilk.
Yeah.
Glenn Cross is still a UFA.
Glenn Cross, I mean, bring Lee Stempniak still out there. There's lots of guys who are still out there, and it would not be a surprise, I think, to anybody in the room to see if the Jets went out and got one of them. You were going to say, Richie?
Well, no, I agree with Eddie that it wasn't a surprise. I got to be honest with you. It appeared Frolik may have turned down similar money from the Jets to go to Calgary. I'm not that upset about that if I'm a Jets fan because I like Michael Frolik, what he can bring to the table. But he's not your top. He's not your top end player, so you lose more of your middle guy who helps you win. That's important, don't get me wrong, but it's the top end guys that you really get hurt if you lose for nothing. So they did mismanage that, but they put himself in a position last year where as soon as they didn't take him to arbitration, they signed him to the 1 year deal, they gave him all the power, and as soon as they got close to the playoffs, they were in a trap. They couldn't trade him because they needed him to make the playoffs, and They got in a little too deep. At the end of the day, they also didn't trade a ton for him. But it does hurt when you're not a cap team and you're going to lose assets for nothing. But at the end of the day, if you look at it in a vacuum of Frolik for that money, they can find other ways to use that money. He's a good player, but I don't think it's going to be a backbreaker. In terms of the Stafford deal, I thought was a good deal for the team. The Burmistrov, good to bring him back because you have a wasted asset before that. You give him a shot, see what he can do. The rest of the moves, I mean, they're fairly inconsequential. So my concern, if I'm a Jets fan, is most of the Western Conference teams have improved. A fair amount of these teams have improved. And I don't think the Jets have improved at all, unless there's going to be significant internal improvement. So if you were able to get into the 8th spot last year because they played Anaheim, who was the 1 seed, and the other teams who didn't make the playoffs have improved, and the other teams who made the playoffs, most have improved, I think, or stayed the same. What does that look like for your next year?
Well, at the end of the, it's a fair point. And at the end of the show, we're going to recap all of the last two segments. We'll recap the entire Central Division to look at all the teams that the Jets are competing with for the playoffs to see what they have done. But it's a fair point because, I mean, you're only, you look at yourself in a vacuum, certainly, but then you look at all the players or the teams around you that have maybe gained some ground on you when it took you 99 points to squeak into the final playoff spot.
I think your other concern, go a little longer. I think your other concern, Ezzy, I want to get Ezzy in on this. When Calgary gets a Dougie Hamilton and a Frolik, for example, Edmonton gets McDavid and the 10 other guys that they got, those moves for those other teams, like the Jets are looking at a long-term process, but those moves for those other teams are also long-term process moves. They're not the one-year hit like the Kessel, which we'll talk about later. Like, let's push it to get it now.
That's right.
Those are more concerning if you're a fan because your competition is increasing, not just for this upcoming year, but it's not going to fall off a cliff. in the years after that.
Right, and this team is obviously a team that is using its core right now, and you could argue that there was never a move like that coming in the short-term plan. So, again, you know, you'd like to maybe see a few more moves, but they're sticking to a plan that they had in place.
Last year, right after free agency, you know, Jets fans were apoplectic about the lack of moves from Kevin Cheveldayoff. And this year, with not very many more moves compared to last year, I don't feel a sense of panic at all.
Well, the first thing you want to be happy about if you're a fan of the team is that they didn't do anything stupid.
Yeah, that's always a factor.
That's an important thing on free agency. But the second thing we've been talking about it for months now is Dustin Byfuglien.
Mm-hmm. What is he still another? Is he the other card to be played in this offseason?
I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're making calls on him.
Well, you hear that they're negotiating with Ladd, and you expect a deal with Andrew Ladd to be done relatively soon, with a couple weeks, a month, whatever. You don't hear a word about them negotiating with Dustin Byfuglien. Maybe it's happening. We don't know.
But maybe they're making calls.
But you and me, and I'm not sure, I think Ezzy, to some extent, you too, feel that he might be a trade chip moving out still in this offseason. Time will tell. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the 10 moves, as you mentioned, Richie, that the Edmonton Oilers made leading into free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, 9:25 in the morning. Coming up in a couple minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260, our affiliate in Edmonton, to talk about the moves the Oilers made. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, the Edmonton Oilers, what a world of difference it makes when your general manager seems to know what he's doing. Peter Chiarelli obviously taking over the reins as GM in Edmonton, and boy was he active both at the NHL draft and in free agency. The trades, acquiring Griffin Reinhart from the New York Islanders, acquiring Cam Talbot from the New York Rangers, acquiring Eric Greiba from the Ottawa Senators, acquiring Lauri Korpikowski from the Arizona Coyotes, and then in free agency signing Andre Sequeira to a six-year $33 million contract, and signing Mark Letestu to a three-year $5.4 million contract. It's undoubtedly, never mind the Connor McDavid factor, it's undoubtedly that the Edmonton Oilers are a far better team today than they were at the end of last year, and I think a lot of that credit goes to Peter Chiarelli.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt, that they signed Connor McDavid, drafted Connor McDavid as well. You're right, Drew. They made some huge moves, and you know this is a big turning point for the Edmonton Oilers right now, with the change of Peter Chiarelli and really the drafting of Connor McDavid. I like all of the signings. I think Andre Sequeira was a good pickup for the LA Kings, and they obviously weren't going to be re-signing him. So I think he adds a veteran defensive defenseman. He's got some offensive abilities as well, but he's more so a prototypical shutdown guy. And then you mentioned Lauri Korpikowski, a pretty good two-way forward, will slot in probably on their third line there. And, you know, Eric Greiba, tough defenseman, guy that can drop the gloves, very physical and just relatively young, had a good year for the Ottawa Senators last year. So, you know, they made some moves. Some of them were depth guys, but really the key to this team is that young core taking the next step, the Taylor Halls, the Jordan Eberles, the Nail Yakupovs, and especially with Connor McDavid there, I think there's a good chance that this team makes the playoffs this year.
Well, they're better for sure. If you want to go one by one, we can just break down the moves, I think.
I mean,
as he mentions, you know, the Connor McDavid doesn't hurt, because all these guys don't come there if Connor McDavid's not there.
Right.
I mean, the signings.
The signings, yeah. You're right.
Bob Nicholson and Peter Chiarelli obviously are a factor there, don't get me wrong, but Connor McDavid is the one. And let's be honest, Peter Chiarelli probably doesn't take the job if Connor McDavid's not there.
Yeah. But that's fine. I mean, you know, it all starts with that, and we know that they got, you know,
Tom McClellan too.
Yeah, that they fall ass backwards into Connor McDavid, and you know we're going to hear about the Oilers' way, you know, 5 years from now, as if they did anything other than lose for, you know, a decade straight.
Yeah.
But I mean,
the Sekera contract is an overpay. Andre Sekera is nothing more than a third 3-4 defenseman, probably at tops. He's smart, moves the puck well. Is he dominant offensively? No. Is he dominant defensively? No. He's a solid player who can move the puck, and that's what they want, guys who can move the puck to their young forwards. So in the context of free agency as a whole, it's an overpay. In the context of Edmonton Oilers, well, it's what they need, and they're willing to overpay a little bit to satisfy that need. If you look at the other two defensemen when they brought in, Eric Greibas, as you mentioned, exactly, tough guy, not a great skater. Kind of an old-fashioned guy. And Griffin Reinhardt, a guy I haven't really loved what I've seen. I mean, not that offensively talented, yeah. Drew. More of a stay-at-home guy. No,
they know Griffin Reinhardt in Edmonton. Obviously, he used to play for the Oil Kings.
So do the Islanders.
So do the Islanders. And that's my point. If Griffin Reinhardt couldn't crack the Islanders' lineup, especially in the playoffs, when they had Hamonic out and they had a lot of defensive injuries, I think the Oilers overpaid for the pedigree of Griffin Reinhardt being, what is he, the fifth overall pick back a number of years ago?
Fourth or fifth, yeah.
I think they overpaid on the Griffin. That's the one thing I don't love a lot about the moves they made.
But they want bodies on the back end, right? So they get their bodies on the back end. Now, the bodies that they've added three defensemen, I think one of which is proficient in moving the puck.
Yeah.
Okay? But I don't think any of which are dominant defensemen by any means. Now, all they really care about is if they, as he talks about the Hall, Eberle, and Nugent Hopkins, and then you have McDavid and Yakupov. Basically, as he's saying, get the puck to the forwards, and hey, well, they'll score 20 goals each. I mean, in reality, all those guys, maybe Nugent Hopkins isn't the scoring type, but he's the passing guy there, but all those guys are capable of scoring 20-plus, and in fact, some of them are capable of scoring much more. So you look at it that way. In terms of Mark Letestu, really like that addition, okay? Because he's a smart fourth-line guy. He's not big, but he solidifies that fourth line. He can make plays, and you need to have that depth. He replaces Boyd Gordon, but for Boyd Gordon, they get Korpikoski. You mentioned kind of a guy who can play all over the roster, who forecheck hard. He's not the most talented guy, but he's an NHL body.
Yeah.
And they've added NHL bodies here. So if you look at the roster, they're most definitely better. And then Cam Talbot, of course, which I don't know anything about. He's obviously very well regarded. But this Oilers team, and as he talks about the playoffs, yeah, I don't love their defense, but by any means. But at the same time, I mean, with the skill that they have, and now they're hopeful, if you're an Oilers fan, ability to move the puck up to their forwards, and new coaching and new system. And
playing in a weak division.
And goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the division's gotten better this offseason.
Arizona's lousy.
Yeah. Gotten better with all their signings.
Well, I don't know. Is Vancouver any better than they were last
year? Maybe not.
You know,
San Jose's better.
San Jose's
LA's better. Probably better.
Yeah, okay, fine. But I mean, it would not be unreasonable that they could make the playoffs.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I think, you know, the core, and we're going to get to Dave Jamieson, so we'll go to break real quick in a second here. The difference is, last year they're putting out guys at the bottom, you know, bottom two lines and bottom two pairings of defense that aren't NHL players.
That's right.
This year they're putting out NHL players.
Right.
And that makes a world of difference. Let's head to break. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from our TSN radio affiliate in Edmonton, our good friend Dave Jamieson. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us. Looks like we may have dropped Dave.
Dave has nothing to say about this. There's a lot of moves.
Yeah, you would think that there'd be a little bit more activity there. But we'll have to get Dave back on the line in a second. Anyways, we'll talk a little bit more about the Oilers coming up in a second.
Let me say something here, Drew. The concern, if you're an Oilers fan, would likely, we might have got Dave back here, but are you concerned at all about the Sekera contract years down the road when you got to pay some of your other guys? Because say Talbot tears it up this year,
mm-hmm.
He's an RFA. He's a part of his UFA.
No,
after,
he's a UFA after this.
That's what I meant. He's a UFA. So say he tears it up. You're going to have to pay him.
Yeah.
Big bucks. Boom. More money off the table. Okay? Now you got... Now maybe you overpaid them right away. The six for Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, and Hall. But you have that security, right, Ezzy? You have the $18 million in those guys.
I think we have Dave. Yeah. Dave, are you there? No, looks like we're still having trouble. We'll keep working on getting Dave Jameson.
The beginning. Here we go.
There you go. Dave, how are you, buddy?
There I am. I'm good, and I'm jealous because I would so desperately love to have an official deli of my show. So I'm very impressed. But no, I'm very much here in the land that, of opportunity and hope and all those other good things that Connor McDavid brings.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, you know, how's the statue coming? Have they commissioned the statue? Do they know who's going to design it yet? You know, where are they at with that?
Well, I think they're in the early stages, but I did note that on the first day of development camp that it was nicely staged, like you'd think it just happened by chance, but he entered through or by the Gretzky statue coming into Rexall Place, and of course he was greeted by guys in their early 20s in hoodies with all sorts of things to sign. So it was all, you know, I mean, it was all there, and he was on the ice, and they were cheering him scoring in an empty net, and It's all quite heady and exciting.
No pressure at all for him. You're walking
none
past,
whatsoever.
Yeah,
no.
You know, you're not. You know, everyone knows he's the savior of the organization, but you know, you might want to hide it or take the pressure off him a little bit of time. But I guess that's not the MO right now.
No, it's not.
Obviously, the Oilers were tremendously busy, both in trades and in free agency. We'll start with the big contract, the Andre Sequeira one, getting the 6 years, the $33 million, the most years of any player that signed in free agency on July 1st. You know, it was just the need that, you know, the Oilers needed bona fide top four NHL defensemen, and they're going to have to pay pretty much whatever the demands were.
Well, yes, and yes to all of what you've just said. For those who, you know, may not be familiar with where the Oilers were defensively, they were barely of NHL quality on many nights last year. So to lay down the kind of money they did for Andre Sequeira, you know, may catch a few people going, really, you've overpaid. Well, when you're desperate, you often do that. And as great as Connor McDavid can be, will be, should be, he doesn't play defense or goal. And so they address goal with Cam Talbot, and they needed to get better quickly. Andre Sekera and they're hoping will eat up big minutes like he did in Carolina. His time in Los Angeles is an anomaly because of some guy named, Doughty and Muzzin. But he, you know, he was 23 minute a night guy in Carolina. And so they expect he'll be that guy again. And that's what they need. They did not have a premier defenseman last year with all, you know, Justin Schultz. They may have wanted that him to be that, but he's not and may never be. He's likely a power play specialist. So what they're getting in Sekera is if not an elite NHL defenseman, then a really, really good one and a guy they can count on for a number of years. And that also allows them to transition sensibly and logically, which hasn't been the Oiler way in some cases, guys like Darnell Nurse, Klefbom, and others.
Dave, you mentioned Cam Talbot, who was acquired from the New York Rangers for the draft picks. I guess first question is, were you happy with what the Oilers gave up to acquire him? And do the Oilers think that he can be the goalie of the future?
Well, yeah, they do think he can be the goalie of the future. When you give up the kind of picks they did, you're throwing a lot of faith. I'm sure there are analytics that we can refer to that show that Cam Talbot is, you know, all that and more. But I always like context. He was playing for the New York Rangers behind a very good defense and a very good team. In a system that, you know, as great as Henrik Lundqvist is, it benefited him too. So, okay, the Oilers aren't that, and they likely won't be that team for a few years yet. So, how good is Cam Talbot? He was good in a relief stint, and a significant one, with a very good team. So let's just say I remain, like a lot of people, optimistic. But, again, I need to see what he plays like night after night behind an Oiler defense, which, albeit, does have Sekera now, and I'm sure there's going to be a tweak or two before they hit the start of the season.
You know, Dave, you look at the acquisition of Griffin Reinhart and then the Oilers dishing off that first-round pick, and we were talking in the segment prior to your coming on about Reinhart. You know, in my opinion, what I've seen from him thus far is, you know, more of a stay-at-home guy and not going to be that offensive or that dominant of a skater. Do you see what do you see his ceiling as, or what do the Oilers see his ceiling as in Edmonton, and how much of a factor was the familiarity with the WHL player from Edmonton?
Well, I think there's, you know, they certainly know what they're getting. They're getting good bloodlines, obviously. You know, his father, Paul Reinhart, was a offensively skilled player for the Atlanta and Calgary Flames, and then closed out his career with the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, he was a power play specialist, a guy, you know, but all of that said, his son is not his father. It was interesting because I was out of town for the draft and was listening actually to our Vancouver station, and their coverage of it, and heard about the trade and all of what went down there, and got home to find that there's really a kind of a mixed reaction when you think of a guy, and he's not an Edmontonian, but an oil king and a good one, a very good one. You would think that there would be this sort of welcome home, prodigal son. This is great. They're, you know, the Oilers reach back and get this first rounder, a New York Islander first rounder, and this is good. But the reaction's been, he was good, but he's got deficiencies in his game. You know, is he quick enough at the NHL level? Is he's a good shutdown defenseman, but people, I think, misunderstand that term. When they want a physical, hard-hitting, you know, cross the blue line lay out, not that they do that anymore in the NHL or very rarely, he plays a different game, and I think Griffin Reinhart's game is a lot more subtle than people might like. That doesn't mean he can't be effective. There's been a lot of good defensemen in the NHL that do little things very well to nullify, you know, the other team. This is going to be one. I heard somebody say, "Yeah, we'll give him 40 or 50 games, and they'll know what they've got, and then they can move him if need be." No. I mean, that's so Edmonton, though, right? I mean, look, if it doesn't solve the problem tonight, then let's get, you know, put him on waivers tomorrow. I think this is he can come in and just be a guy and an effective one on a defense with Sakara, and they've got some other parts. Klefbom is ready now, and Nurse is coming, and you don't know how long he'll be in down in the minors next year. So maybe Reinhart doesn't have to be much more than Griffin Reinhart, which is not a bad thing.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dave Jamieson from our TSN radio affiliate in Edmonton, discussing the moves made by the Oilers via trade and in free agency. And Dave, another move the Oilers made, they get Mark Letestu in on a 3-year contract, $5.4 million, $1.8 per season. You know, spent the last 4 years or so with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Not flashy, but he's going to certainly solidify the bottom six center spot for the Oilers. Was that sort of a target that Peter Chiarelli went out and, you know, wanted to get bona fide NHL bodies to fill those bottom six roles?
Younger, cheaper, faster, less wear on the tires than Boyd Gordon, who they shipped to Arizona. Letestu, a kid from Elk Point, Alberta, home of Sheldon Surrey. He's we had him on my show just after the deal was announced, or the signing rather, and he, you know, it's a kid coming home to play in Alberta, so there's an excitement there for him. But he is, they're hoping he can do what Boyd Gordon did, and Boyd Gordon did, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting on bad Oiler teams in terms of faceoffs, and he was very effective there, but it'd play a hard game, and that'll catch you at the age Boyd Gordon is. So they get a younger version that they don't have to spend nearly as much money on, and if they can, you know, and it's funny because not that Letestu's old, he comes in as one of the older guys, and this is a team that still, you know, they've got an Andrew Ferentz, they've got a couple of other guys, even Taylor Hall's now in year six. It's still a young team, and it still doesn't have, you know, and so Letestu can maybe help in that area as well.
Dave, no surprise, yesterday Connor McDavid signed his 3-year entry-level deal. Any idea from Todd McClellan where Connor McDavid's going to play? Could potentially be one of those top center positions, and I guess who would Connor McDavid play with?
How about I answer this way? whoever he wants. I mean, he's, you know, right now, look, I mean, we put up on the day of the free agent frenzy and sort of spitballed, you know, here's how the lineup will look, right? And we had him as the second line center. And I, you know, so much is going to, and this is a cliche, obviously, is going to be determined, you know, put aside this orientation camp. I mean, this is just, you know, what it is, which is bringing guys in and telling them, look, that's where the, you know, the skates are sharpened and we're going to get you out on the ice and here's what we, you know, like you to think of when you think of the Edmonton Oilers and all that stuff. When he gets to camp, is there a chemistry? Is there a fit in terms of, you know, because the thing that I think they're going to have to guard against is Connor McDavid, and he has come, and he's been so successful through the course of his career to this point, is he's done everything well. And you want him to continue to push to be that kind of player, but, you know, his first inclination when he gets on the ice is maybe going to be, I can do it all, like I did in junior. And that's not how it's going to play out, at least initially, in the NHL. So I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, do you have the veteran winger? You know, do you have him with a Teddy Purcell? And, again, I don't. I mean, he's a tremendous playmaker, great vision, all the stuff we already know. Who fits that? You know, what works there? You know, he's surprisingly, for a player who's got such great elite offensive ability, is defensively responsible too. He's very aware and very good at that. You know, his own scouting report on himself is needs to work in faceoffs. Okay, well, show me a young player who doesn't when they get into the NHL, right? So I don't know what to tell you right there, other than I think there'll be a veteran, one vet, and somebody, God, who knows what kind of a Nail Yakupov shows up, because I don't think the Oilers are nearly have not closed the book on that story.
He certainly improved at the end of last year, Dave. Yes. Two other players. Final question for you: the last two other acquisitions, Lauri Korpikoski comes in. You know, kind of a Swiss Army knife forward. Give us your take on that one, and then Eric Greiba. Kind of sounds like a similar definition to Reinhardt, although with a little bit less talent. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I love your term, Swiss Army knife guy. Just, you know, somebody just, you know, do something, do anything for us, right? You know, can a guy who can maybe on any given night not have very many minutes given to him, but when he does, he's effective doing it, right? So again, I don't know what he's making, but, you know, a lot of these, as you get further down in the roster, you've got to take a look at, you know, who are you replacing? And of course, in the, you know, they get Letestu, but they give up Gordon. So, you know, are we getting kind of a wash in two players making around what Gordon did? I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I can't argue from that perspective, but again, good depth. Done it, been there, so they know what they're getting. Greiba, you know, again, you know, you don't need a four Drew Doughtys or four Seabrooks or four Duncan Keats on your defense to be good. You need, you know, if you've got Sequeira and you've got Greiba and you've got Reinhardt and you've got Klefbom and you know you've got Nurse coming and you've still got the captain, Andrew Ferentz, there, and, I mean, he almost now looks like a seventh defenseman. The big question is going to be, you know, where does Justin Schultz fit in all of this? Because his career has gone backwards, not forwards. You know, there's still a lot of offensive ability there, and I think anyone can see that. But I think, you know, Greiba just gives you know when he's over the boards that he can do it at the NHL level. And, of course, they've still got Nikita Nikitin, and, you know, I don't know if there's an Oiler fan out there that would be overjoyed to have him back next year. So he's a likely guy to move, but, you know, it's a big contract, I think 4.4 per. They overpaid to get him last year, but and he didn't deliver on really anything.
Dave Jamieson covers the Edmonton sports scene for our affiliate TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, is Matt Nichols up to the challenge?
I believe so, but I come from a position that I have to, you know, declare myself after working for the Eskimos for 14 years and knowing Matty from when he came in after being a cut of the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, there was a time when Matt Nichols arrived in Edmonton, certainly early on. They were projecting him because that was, you know, kind of post-Ricky Ray, and you know, that maybe he could be that guy. Injuries and, you know, some inconsistent play have relegated him to the position he finds himself in, and that's why they went and got Mike Riley. But I think Nichols can. I mean, there are a lot of people that want to say, go to James Franklin right now based on the preseason. Well, James Franklin, you know, again, let's go back to context. Preseason football, it looks like football, but it kind of isn't. And while those numbers were gaudy and he did some really good things, I would be, Matt Nichols is the safe choice. He's also a free agent after this year, so he's motivated to put up, if nothing else. And Ed Hervey was on my show, and he said, look, we fully anticipate Nichols to test the market. He should. But he's been here 6 years, so he's not going to be the starter. But he could be that, you know, that really good fire extinguisher, if you will. He doesn't have to be great. He just has to be good, make smart choices. And if they're going to have to establish a running game with Chad Simpson, a former Bomber, and if they can do that and their defense can be better than they already are, which is really good, the Eskimos can get through this time without Riley, and they'll probably be okay.
Lots going on in the Edmonton sports scene. Dave, appreciate your time as always this morning, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care, Dave. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Dyke left it. Williams shot. Rice wasn't fooled. He was waiting for that. His center. Score! And he was not ready for that. A wraparound by the Maple Leafs coming in as Price made the first save. And then the puck was loose, and there was Kessel.
Former Toronto Maple Leafs forward Phil Kessel. That was his last goal ever. Presumably his last goal ever as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, having been traded earlier this week to the Pittsburgh Penguins. The deal in its entirety going to Toronto. Defenseman Scott Harrington, forward Kasperi Kapanen, forward Nick Spaulding, a conditional 2016 first-round pick and a 2016 third-round pick. The Penguins get Kessel, a conditional 2016 second-round pick, Tim Erickson, and Tyler Biggs, and the Leafs retain 15% of Kessel's salary. Really, you can boil it down to Kessel for Kasperi Kapanen and Scott Harrington. Is this a good deal for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Is this the deal that gets them back to being a bona fide Stanley Cup contender in the NHL's Eastern Conference?
No. I mean, it's a good trade. It's not going to make them a contender. Well, it makes them better. I don't think they're a contender at this point. I mean, does anybody disagree with that?
They have an offense that's envious. They have a top six that a lot of people would take.
Defense needs tons of work.
Their defense is certainly where their problems are.
Where were we that before?
Last 7 years. Yeah, I mean,
it's a good trade, Drew, because Phil Kessel is he's a 6-time 30-goal scorer. I think 5 or 6-time 30-goal scorer, and he had 60 points last year, and it was a terrible year for him, and in the second half especially. But he's a bona fide 75-70-point guy, right? So it makes them better because they didn't have that. Chris Kunitz, he's gotten a little bit older. His skills have declined. Pascal Dupuis' health is uncertain, which is unfortunate because that was the line that was really one of the best lines in hockey. If you remember the Olympic year, Chris Kunitz made the Olympic team essentially because of the way he played with Sidney Crosby over the last few years. Mm-hmm. He's always been a good player. But Phil Kessel's a guy that whether you put him with Evgeny Malkin or you put him with Sidney Crosby, he's a top 10 winger in the NHL. And sure, he has major deficiencies. We've talked about that over the last year. And he's not a very good defensive player, but I think the fact that Phil Kessel goes to Pittsburgh and he doesn't have to be the guy. He was the guy into Toronto, and he couldn't handle that. He doesn't like the media. Toronto's media are a pack of wild hyenas, and they ate him up. And they knew it, and they picked on his weaknesses. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, it wouldn't have happened in a different market. It could have happened in New York. It could have happened in Vancouver. But I'm just saying that Phil Kessel last year, I mean, we knew he was going to get moved. Pittsburgh wanted him. Pittsburgh also reportedly was very interested in Brandon Saad. But I think Phil Kessel, you know, it's funny. Phil Kessel is only 27 years old. People think he's a little bit older. Mm-hmm. He's been in the NHL since he was 18 when he came in with Boston. But, I mean, this guy he's a sniper. I mean, this guy has amazing speed, and he might be a little bit out of shape. I think that in Pittsburgh, a fresh beginning is going to be huge for him. But I do not think at this point Pittsburgh's a contender. That defense last year was, especially without Chris Letang and Olli Mäta.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's the key, guys. If Chris Letang and Olli Mäta, those are two of the best puck-moving defensemen in the NHL. If those guys are healthy, it's a different story in the playoffs. But without those guys, I mean, Paul Martin's gone, Christian Ehrhoff is gone, and, you know, a guy like Derek Pouliot, they have a lot invested in him. Mm-hmm. That's why they were able to give up to Scott Harrington. Derek Pouliot, former first-round pick in, was it 2012, 2013, They hope that he takes the next step.
2012, that defense, eighth overall.
That defense needs to get a lot better, Richie, before we can start calling them a contender, because the Rangers are still better, the Lightning are better, the Habs are better, even a team like the Red Wings, I think, with the moves they made are better. Mm-hmm. So they're better up front, but to me, I still would have liked to see Pittsburgh acquire a number one defenseman or a number two defenseman.
I mean, Ezzy, I agree with you, and this is the thing, okay? If you're going to project their lines for next year, say they do Crosby, Kessel, and Kunitz as their first line, and their second line is Malkin, just Malkin, Hornquist, and Perron, okay?
Sure.
Is Dupuis healthy or not? You know, Dupuis plays alongside. You know, he's always complimented Crosby well. Say just line up Dupuis. If he plays, we don't know what his health status is going to be, and Sutter. Still have four spots to fill in the forward group. Then you look at the back end. Okay. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a dynamic amount of talent on that top six or so. But still, look at the back end. Say you're going to do your number one pairing, Letang and Mäta. Okay, because his injury was huge last year, Mata's was. Okay, mm-hmm. And obviously Letang was off and on as well. Your second pairing is... Exactly.
Scuderi?
Scuderi's not a second pairing defenseman. So say he's your third pairing defenseman, Scuderi.
They re-signed Ian Cole to a three-year deal.
And I know they like him. I don't know enough about Ian Cole. I like Ben Lovejoy, but... Is Pouliot playing with Lovejoy as your second pairing?
I assume
it's possible, Rich, because as you mentioned, guys like Rob Scuderi,
36 years old,
and Ian Cole. I mean, Ian Cole was the third pairing defenseman for St. Louis. He came over from St. Louis. These are more third pairing guys, especially with Scuderi's age. So Derek Pouliot, to me, is a guy that now they hope he takes the next step. But there's a lot of butts there, and especially with Chris Letang's health. I'm a huge fan of Chris Letang.
Yeah.
I mean, when they won the Cup in 2009. He was a top defenseman. They need that top defenseman. We've talked about this time and time again. Who did Tampa Bay have? Victor Hedman. Who did L.A. have? Drew Doughty. Who did Chicago have? Well, they had Keith Seabrook, Jarmelson, Oduya. So, I mean, you got to have top defensemen. And last year you could see that they missed these guys. You had, you know, Brian Dumoulin and Taylor Chorney and all these guys that are really, you know, kind of fringe NHL guys. You need to know that your defense is being led by someone. And that guy's usually Chris Letang. Olli Mäta is still young to really say he's leading the defense. At times he did. But to me, you know, back to Kessel, Drew. I mean, Kessel, he's an excellent hockey player. I mean, this year, you can't really look at this year as kind of what is reflective of Phil Kessel's career. This is a guy that's had a couple of 80-point seasons. And you put him on the wing with Sidney Crosby,
with
Rich.
Bozak.
Or Evgeny Malkin, either one of those guys. I mean, he's gonna get back to that 75-80 point range. I mean, these are two of the best centers in the NHL still. Might be a little bit older, but they're still elite centers. And I think Kessel is a perfect fit for this Pittsburgh team.
I mean, he can shoot the puck. He's got an amazingly quick release, and he's very good in transition. And he's playing with guys like Crosby who can push the pace.
And they can get him the puck.
They can get him the puck. And Malkin can get him the puck, too. I think they're probably going to try him with Crosby to start.
Really? I thought it would be Malkin.
Keep try with Crosby to start.
Okay.
I want to keep number one happy.
Yeah.
I agree with Rich. I think he's going to eventually stick on that line. I mean, you're talking about two all-stars there, right?
Yeah.
And not that Malkin isn't. I think Malkin, Crosby's a better playmaker. I think Rich is right. I think you put your two big guys together.
Yeah, I think they've been looking to get Malkin a winger for so long, though, that they might give him a chance.
Crosby likes to dish the puck pretty quick.
Yeah.
I think that helps with Kessel's speed and transition and get the shot off. Malkin likes to hold it a little longer. Not that Crosby doesn't like to hold it, but he doesn't hold as long as Malkin does. So I think that'll be an interesting part to watch. You know, even if they get Bo Bennett signed here, who's got some talent. They have a lot of talent in that top nine.
He hasn't been able to stay healthy either, Rich.
Right. They got a lot of talent in that top nine. How do they supplement those scores? And how do they fill that defense? Still a lot of questions there.
We'll try and answer those questions with Mike Colligan, Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent for thehockeywriters.com, coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Mike Colligan. Mike is the Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent for thehockeywriters.com and NHL analyst for Forbes Sports Money. Michael, good morning. Happy 4th of July to you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, I think it's almost the calm after the storm here with all of not only the free agent signings that we're used to seeing on July 1st, but really this has become the trade deadline, I think, or at least the fake trade deadline with all the activity, not a lot of cap space to move, and certainly quite a few moves, I'm sure, for you guys to digest at this point.
Yes, you're absolutely correct about that. Brought you on to obviously talk about the biggest of all the trades, at least in my opinion. Phil Kessel being acquired by the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for Scott Harrington, Kasperi Kapanen, some other players as well. You know, Kessel to the Penguins. How big of a void does this fill for the team, and what does this do for their playoff chances, their Stanley Cup aspirations for next season?
Oh, I think we can't argue it fills a huge void for them, and we've never seen Sidney Crosby or Genny Malkin with at least this type of shooter and scorer alongside them. So I think that's certainly a huge add for them if you ignore all the other factors. As you think of the Penguins and you look at really what they've done over the last 2 years, it's been 5 or 6 years now without a Stanley Cup, and the pressure has mounted there in Pittsburgh as they try to at least take advantage of what's left of this window with that Crosby and Malkin group. But last year, a team that really, when it came down to it, couldn't score goals. And they had traded James Neal in the prior offseason. I think that was a move that came back to bite them a bit when you look at the ability for teams to just shut down Crosby and Malkin. And it was a very one-dimensional team. So I think that their need really, especially when you look at a defense next year that's not going to be as strong as it has in the past, they needed to find a way to score some goals. And that's tough to do. You look at that free agent market this summer, there weren't any big-time goal scorers or at least reliable ones out there. So I think Phil Kessel quickly became their number one priority, and it was just a matter of what Toronto wanted in a trade. I think it was a bit of a standoff between the two teams as we headed into draft weekend. Things got a bit heated between those two organizations, but ultimately I think Toronto knew that they needed to move Kessel, and it really ended up being terms that I think were pretty favorable for the Pittsburgh Penguins as they acquired him, as you mentioned, for two pretty good prospects, a couple of picks, but maybe not what a lot of people expected going back to Toronto in what was essentially a blockbuster deal there.
Mike, you mentioned that Phil Kessel was priority number one for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Was Brandon Saad priority number two? Because you hear that Pittsburgh was in on him. Was there a chance that they maybe would have acquired both of these players?
You know, what's funny is despite the reports that Pittsburgh was in on him and potentially had an offer or even a better offer than Columbus, I had actually heard the opposite, that they weren't involved. And that's not that they didn't have an interest. I think they would have loved to grab Brandon Saad, a guy that's from Pittsburgh. And for years now, many in the Pittsburgh media and the fan base have looked at that as the one that got away, a guy that, you know, you would think in your backyard, you've scouted him well. And we know how the draft works. I mean, Saad was a guy that fell, and every team in the NHL passed him up, including Chicago, three times in that draft before they ultimately grabbed him. But that still became the one guy that everyone in Pittsburgh would have loved to have as just that hometown kid that's really been the best player to ever come out of that city. And so without the opportunity, I think, from Chicago to get involved in those trade discussions, there was a lot of frustration, I think, heading into July 1st and prior to that Kessel deal. The ability to find that winger that potentially was there and they never even were in the mix, I think, was leading to a lot of frustration and consternation with that group. But ultimately, I think, going into this period, and I think even as July 1st came along, Phil Kessel was always going to be that number one priority.
Mike, we were talking before you hopped on, you know, putting you on the spot here a little bit, but who do you think Kessel would compliment more, Malkin or Crosby?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll tell you what, Rich, it's one that I think I could argue both ways. If we're talking purely on the ice, I think about Sidney Crosby as being a much more straight-ahead player, and you think of Phil Kessel and his time in Toronto and even Boston, a guy that I think was really just a straight-ahead guy coming down the right wing with a ton of speed, and that's, you know, what Sidney Crosby likes to play at that high level of speed. It's actually something it makes him very difficult to find line mates for, is because no one can play at that kind of speed level, at least going straight forward up the ice. So I think he'd be a great fit with Kessel from that perspective. On the other hand, I think about Evgeny Malkin, and where he really has excelled was when he had James Neal, and Neal did such a good job at just kind of finding the soft spots in the offensive zone. A guy that, you know, with Malkin drawing all the attention, he likes to have the puck on his stick and he likes to be creative, but what Neal did so well was finding those areas, waiting, opening up for a shot, and then finishing all of those opportunities. I think Kessel could be exactly the same type of player with his deadly shot and his ability to get open in that offensive zone when Malkin's drawing all the attention. That could be a deadly combo as well. And then you go back to, I think, more off-ice issues and perspectives, where who is a little more desperate there? You know, both obviously would love to play with a guy like Kessel. I think with all the losing and frustrations that come with the high pressure on the Pittsburgh Penguins, both players had to be thinking at this point, what's the long-term future in Pittsburgh, especially if things don't turn around? And so if you're concerned about one or the other wanting to be in Pittsburgh long-term, maybe that factors into it as well, as far as providing them with that opportunity to get Phil Kessel. But when you think back to James Neal and when the Penguins originally acquired him from Dallas, he was supposed to be with Sidney Crosby. And with Crosby only being out with that concussion problem, that was the reason he ended up, Neal ended up playing with Malkin. So it'll be funny to see how this maybe potentially goes the other way and Crosby gets that first crack with Phil Kessel on his wing, which I think would just be an incredibly fast and hard to handle line.
Our guest is Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com, also the NHL analyst for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, obviously the Penguins forward group, the top six, probably one of the envies of the entire NHL. But you look at their current salary cap situation, you look at where they stand. They only have 8 forwards under contract. Bo Bennett, obviously an RFA, so that'll probably get done at some point in time. You know, they only have $6 million in salary cap space. They need to sign a number of forwards. They only have 6 defensemen under contract as well. You know, how are they going to handle filling all the remaining holes and getting it done under the salary cap?
Well, certainly one of the arguments against the Penguins' methodology for building a roster has been how top-heavy they've been, with not only Crosby and Malkin, but also Chris Letang and Marc-Andre Fleury making significant money. So this won't change that. And with Phil Kessel coming in now with a $6.8 million cap hit, they're even more top-heavy. I don't think they can get away without having a fourth line altogether. So we will see additional moves from the Penguins. But like you said, with cap pressures being a challenge, they'll either have to go very cheap or find some entry-level guys. There's one, when you mentioned 8, I think that might be one short, and the guy missing there would be Sergei Plotnikov from the KHL. He's a young guy that came in, and they signed to a one-year entry-level contract. And while the base salary is the standard, you know, $925,000 that we see every entry-level player get, he's got almost up to $3 million in potential scoring bonuses on top of that. So a very favorable deal, one that we see, you know, Connor McDavid and some of these top first-round picks get. But it's a way to kind of maneuver a bit where with those bonuses and the way the CBA works, you have a bonus cushion where you can be over the cap effectively during the year. That's a creative way for the Penguins to start to fill some of these gaps, and we'll see what the transfer from the KHL will do for players like Plotnikov. So there are big questions on that fourth line, and depth was always a challenge for the Penguins. I think they'll look to find a cheap, versatile player. A couple guys that come to mind are Mike Santorelli, Sean Mathias. I don't think either of those have signed at this point. Eric Fair, another one. But at this point, it's really going to be coming down to those top-line players. And with a defense that has lost now Brooks Orpik, Matt Niskanen, Paul Martin, and Christian Ehrhoff in back-to-back summers, they're going to really need to find some ways to outscore teams. I don't think they're going to be shutting teams down and winning a lot of 1-0 or 2-1 games.
Mike, you mentioned the defense there, and we were talking about this before we had you on. There's tons of question marks there, and Scott Harrington was obviously part of the Phil Kessel trade last year. They traded Simon Dupre, who they had a lot invested in. To me, you look at a guy like Derek Pouliot, who played about 30 or so games last year, 2012 eighth overall pick. Is he a guy that they really hope takes that next step? Because there are certainly some holes there, considering that a guy like Rob Scuderi is more suited to be a bottom you know, third pairing guy. Same thing with goes for Ian Cole, who they re-signed.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment with Rob Scuderi at this point in his career. Despite the $3.3 million cap hit, he's really a number six defenseman. He's still good on the penalty kill, but just doesn't have the foot speed, doesn't have the skills at this point to really be much more than a number six. So the question is, how do you fill it in your gaps there when you got Chris Letang and Olimata probably pegged as your top pair? Now we're talking Ben Lovejoy, Ian Cole, and Derek Pouliot as kind of your wild cards in that middle mix, at least at this point. Pouliot, I think, will be a fantastic defenseman in the NHL. Really kind of a Sergei Zubov-type player. I don't know that he'll ever be that effective or that good, but just reminds me a lot of what Zubov was able to do as far as slowing the game down, great skating, great offensive abilities there. I think he's a future power play quarterback for this Penguins power play, but the problem is he's still very young, and he showed last year when he got opportunities at the NHL level, wasn't quite ready, especially on the defensive end, to play top line or even second pair minutes. So that's a question with him. Ian Cole, I think, will absolutely move into the second pair. I think he played pretty well and solid at his opportunity that he finally got in Pittsburgh. So he slots in. And then the big question is Ben Lovejoy. Lovejoy played very well in Anaheim alongside Cam Fowler for a bit, but struggled a little bit when he got that big role in Pittsburgh. And so when you look at that group as a whole and the injury risk that comes with Chris Letang and his problems with concussions and strokes, there's a big risk on that back end that things could go pretty ugly. And I think we'll see what happens there. But as you mentioned, with the cap pressures that they have, not much more they can do. They're going to have to give these younger players an opportunity to show if they're ready. And I think that's going to be probably the biggest success or failure factor when we look back on this season 12 months from now.
Mike, we've got a couple more questions for you here. Just wanted to ask you quickly, is there any update on Pascal Dupuis' health status?
Dupuis, I'll tell you, if there's one guy that I would never rule out, it would be Dupuis. With his determination, his interest in getting back, I think he's a very likely bet to make it back at some point. Now, the problem is he's been dealing with blood clots, and also on top of that, the reason he even got into the blood clot issue in the first place was he blew out his knee. So at his age, that's a big question mark, but I think he will be back at some point and is under contract for the next two seasons.
Mike, final question here. We haven't asked you about the guys, you know, in detail, at least the guys that the Penguins sent over to Toronto, mainly being Harrington, of course, and Kapanen. Can you give us kind of a breakdown of what the Penguins are giving up there?
Yeah, Scott Harrington was a second-round pick a few years ago and came, I believe, from London. So Mark Hunter there in Toronto, obviously would know him very well. Even Kyle Dubas, with their experience in that league, to junior leagues, they'll know those players very well. I think Harrington will be a guy that fans will not be excited about, but I think real hockey scouts will really appreciate what he can do. Is kind of a very quiet, conservative, shutdown defender. I think he's got upside of potentially a second pair for Toronto. It won't be next year. He needs some work. He especially needs to get a little bit stronger and utilize his 6'2" frame. But he's a guy that I think will be very reliable. And again, for people that are really watching his game, you'll notice not a lot of mistakes. Very, very reliable on a second pair there. And then for Kapanen, I think first round pick last year, very dynamic. Interesting guy because he was playing in the Finnish Elite League. He's still only 18 years old, which is incredible, but he's playing against men. And so it's tough to gauge an 18 or even a 17-year-old that's playing with guys that much older than him. He would score goals that I thought looked NHL caliber, and then he'd disappear for times. And I think that was some of the frustration from fans, at least, that were looking at him. But I think he has the potential to be a very dynamic scorer as he develops, and you give him a couple years when Toronto's into that window where they're starting to compete. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's a top six forward that's pretty pretty reliable as far as a scoring perspective for that Toronto Maple Leaf organization.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He covers the NHL as their analyst for Forbes Sports Money as well. Mike, appreciate your time this morning as always, and happy Independence Day. As I mentioned, go have a barbecue and you know, set off some fireworks or something along those lines.
All right, guys. Always fun. Thanks a lot for having me, and then talk to you soon.
Happy 4th of July, Mike.
Talk to you soon. Take care. Let's go to break. That is Mike Colligan joining us to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
And then the Bruins would have to come up with a spectacular exhibition in Montreal. Marchand to the back. Hamilton with his shot. Patrice Bergeron to Brad Marchand. Watch him pull out of breaks right here. And then he puts up, gets it to Dougie Hamilton. Price moving right, and the puck goes past him on the glove side.
Newest acquisition of the Calgary Flames, Dougie Hamilton, scoring a goal in that clip. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's been here for 2 weeks. This is his last night, killing it night after night. Damon Schritter in town. Check him out online, rumorscomedyclub.com, to get tickets.
By the way, Drew, right now,
yes,
we're making history. We're live on Periscope right now.
Yeah, you don't even know what that means, do you?
It's a live video cast, and people are joining actually right now.
Really? There's people who are watching us?
Yes.
Actually, I don't know if that's necessarily... Remember when we used to do Cover It Live back in the day, where we'd have the live video stream?
I do, yeah.
It was called Ustream.
Yeah, it was Cover It Live, yeah, or Ustream.
This is like Ustream. People are watching you right now, so Drew, you might want to take that Timbit out of your mouth.
Yeah, that's how I do the show. That's what makes it better, having a Timbit in my mouth at that point in time. Anyways, let's talk about the Calgary Flames, and we'll talk about the Dougie Hamilton acquisition and signing. Let's talk about the Michael Frolik.
All right, get rid of that. What are you doing over there?
He's distracted, so he's going to be useless this segment. So 5 years for Frolik, $21.5 million. There's a lot of talk that the reason Calgary got him is because they agreed to go that extra fifth year, that people were debating 3 years, 4 years. Calgary went that fifth year, and that's what tipped the scales in their favor to get Michael Frolik for $4.3 million salary cap hit per season. Are you surprised? I mean, we were talking for weeks on end beforehand that we thought Frolik, would be up. Some people were speculating 4.5, 5, even a little bit more than that.
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy, of course. But doesn't that go to show you really how restrained general managers actually were this year, in that Frolik ends up not at a bad number at 4.3, but given the inflationary nature of free agency, people thought it would be a lot higher.
That's fair. It's true, Drew. Why is Ezzy still videotaping me?
I don't know.
It's not videotaping. It's Periscope, man.
What is that? It's a live stream?
Yes. Richie, you know what?
It's very hard to...
You have nothing to worry about. You're looking handsome.
I don't understand. I'm sitting here talking. You have your phone right in my face.
Well, it's not right in your face. I got a couple feet here.
So,
I'll turn it off.
The Frolik contract, Drew. I mean, what you have, and I was talking to Rick about this on Wednesday, what you have in this cap market and the cap system is term is just as valuable as the money, even more valuable. So is Frolik more apt to take 4.5 for 4 years or 4.3 for 5 years? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because that extra year of security, and who knows what the landscape's going to be then, although you think it'd probably go up. So the extra year gets the team that player. Now, from Calgary's perspective, they're thinking, what, Michael Frolik's 27 years old. On the last year, he'll be 32, still should be in a productive range, and we can reevaluate it then. If he was 30, maybe they would have only given him 4 years. So from that perspective, I understand where they're coming from. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, and another aspect of this Calgary, why it works in Calgary, is you could argue this is similar in Winnipeg, although they're probably more advanced in Calgary. You have Monahan, you have Gaudreau. You have Bennett coming through the system. Obviously, Hudler had a great year. But you have that young core, and you want to augment the young core with a guy who can kind of do everything. Now, you could argue the same for the Jets. But by all accounts, the Jets' offer was very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And you had heard rumblings throughout the year that Frolik wanted out. It's odd, and we talked about it with Rick on Wednesday. I talked about it with Rick. Calgary's an odd choice for an alternative market to Winnipeg. Now, I'm not saying, Calgary's a nice city, but... and got the mountains and stuff, but it's just weird.
It's not a free agent hotbed.
New York City, right?
Yeah.
So when you look at it and take all those things into account, I mean, I wouldn't be overly upset if I'm a Jets fan that they lost Frolik. I'd be disappointed, but not overly upset. And I think from Calgary's perspective, yeah, probably gave him an extra year too long, maybe a little bit extra cash, but you think he makes you better and he's still an age where you don't think he's going to hurt you too much.
Rich, it's like you said before, though, knowing that you're going to have some players that are going to be on the books after this coming year, mm-hmm. and it's not just Andrew Ladd and potentially Dustin Byfuglien, who there's a chance they also sign him to an extension before he becomes a UFA, because really you don't want to lose him. So it's either, you know, you let him go to free agency after the trade deadline, you trade him before the trade deadline, or you sign him.
Sure.
And it's probably going to be more like 4 or 5 years, whereas Gary Lawless has said he thinks Ladd's going to be probably around 6 years. So do you want Michael Frolik making $4.5 million a year when those players are under contract, Rich, and you have Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, Adam Lowry, the core of your team? I mean, this is the young core of the team, right? This is who they're going to build around. You're talking 3, 4, 5 years down the road when some of these players are a little bit older. And obviously the Jets are still building around Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, and Brian Little. That's your top six forwards there, but those are your veterans. We're talking about the guys that you've drafted in 2011, 2012, and then you throw in Ehlers in there, Drew, and you throw in guys like Kyle Connor. I mean, Frolik, I don't know, Rich, when you can only sign your own players to 8 years, I don't know if signing Michael Frolik to 5 years with the amount of money he's got, when you mentioned you've got a lot of money tied up on defense. You've got money tied up in Tyler Myers. You've got money tied up in Tobias Enstrom. So when you factor all of those things in, and now you have to hope that Alexander Burmistrov coming back, Nikolai Ehlers rookie season, you have to hope that you're making up those 40-50 points with Alexander Burmistrov, Nikolai Ehlers, a combination of those. Now, I still think because they haven't signed Lee Stempniak or Jurij Tolusti or Jim Slater, I said this during the first segment, I still think the Jets need to sign a veteran forward in there. And, you know, Blake Como was a guy that we talked about. He signed with Colorado. We mentioned a guy like Curtis Glencross, a guy that at this point in his career, maybe his offensive numbers have decreased a little bit, but he'll give you 15 goals, 35 points. They need a guy like that because there are going to be struggles. If a guy like Joel Armia comes in, we don't know how Joel Armia is going to be in the NHL. He's never played in the, well, he's played, I think, a couple games in the NHL.
The difference is, Ezzy, about is the Jets cap situation. The Jets have room versus Calgary. Do you know that Frolik is the highest paid Calgary Flame forward right now?
Right, because they're so young. Right, guys like Monahan and Gaudreau, they're on entry-level deals, so that doesn't surprise me.
And you'll get David Jones off the books after next year, and that's $4 million that you'll allot to the likes of Monahan and Gaudreau, who are both RFAs after this upcoming season.
And you got to pay Hudler after this year, too.
Yeah, we'll see what they do there.
Yeah.
And you got to pay Giordano. I mean, Giordano's number one because he's a UFA, and he's more important than Hudler. Hudler's number two because he's a UFA, and then Monahan and Gaudreau. So your money's going to go up. But you see what I mean in that he's the highest paid forward on the team right now. Mm-hmm. So, and they can go up. And then they have the two goaltenders that they're paying a combined $8.3 million right now.
Well, maybe they re-signed Kari Ramo to a one-year $3.8 million contract.
I thought it was kind of high, really. But,
I thought it was
high. But at the end of the day, Drew, you see what they're kind of doing different than Dallas in that they have two guys at $8.3 million, but they're both off the books next year.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to clear off those books. And obviously Chris Russell is another guy who's interesting because you would think – that with Russell, a pending UFA Alberta boy who's really fared well in Calgary, Ladislav Smead and Derek Englund, especially Smead. Smead seems like the guy to me that Calgary's going to look to dish off here.
Making $3.5 million this year and next year.
Stay-at-home guy who's not very proficient offensively. You know, he can play a mean game, so you would think Calgary might look to dish him off. Yeah. And if they could get less term, maybe a guy who's up next year, they would just get rid of the contract. So that would be somebody I would expect Calgary to move to open up some space.
They get Dougie Hamilton from Boston. Obviously, that happened at the draft, and you guys talked about when you were broadcasting. And then they sign him to the six-year contract extension.
Love it.
Worth $34.5 million, $5.75 million salary cap hit per season.
I don't love Dougie Hamilton's game. I've said that before. I know everybody's having a love fest for Dougie Hamilton. I don't think...
What don't you like about it?
I don't think he plays physical enough, especially based on his size. I don't think he always makes the best decisions on the ice. Having said all of that, their learning experience that you go through as a very young defenseman, he's only 22 years old. He can shoot the puck. He's got good offensive skills. He can move the puck out of his own zone. They got him for a very, very good price. First and 2 seconds. I just don't think they're going to get. I mean, the player, they're getting a first round pick. They're going to draft at the position lower than where Hamilton was taken, and then 2 seconds, and he's already been developed. He's a big right handed shooting NHL defense. I mean, I thought the trade didn't make much sense from Boston's perspective, okay?
Right.
So I like that move for Calgary. I don't love Hamilton like everybody else does, but I still like the move for Calgary.
I don't think Dougie Hamilton's the greatest defenseman in the NHL, but he's a young top four defenseman. I mean, he had 42 points last year. He might not be physical, but he's an offensive defenseman, right?
Absolutely, is he?
I agree with you. I'm not saying that he's going to win the Norris Trophy one day, but I think that especially when you look at who Calgary has on defense right now already, right, with Mark Giordano and TJ Brody and Chris Russell and Dennis Weidman. I think you've got a good mix there of skill and physicality. Obviously, if they move Smead, that's a guy who's a physical defenseman. But
yeah, but England is too, right? Is he gonna
yeah,
pick one
England. England's your sixth or seventh guy at this point in his career, especially when you're as deep as Calgary is. But I like the move because this is a fast, skilled team, right? With Monahan, and you got Bennett coming up, and Gaudreau, and Hudler, and then you throw in Frolik. I think Brad Treliving's done really well here.
I agree. I mean, Calgary's moves is absolutely no. I don't have an issue with him. Yeah, I don't love the term in dollars for Frolik, but you take off a year and a .3. I mean, at the end of the day, that's not going to kill you, especially with the way that their cap looks.
Sure.
And the Hamilton deal to me is a no brainer. I mean, you're saying, okay, I'm going to go Giordano, Brody, Hamilton, Weidman, Russell. Yeah. I mean,
best defense in hockey, potentially.
You could say that.
Probably in the argument, certainly pretty close
to
it.
It's hard to say anybody's better than Chicago, but now they're losing Oduya. Yeah. And you could argue that it's maybe the top three,
maybe
top
five, one through five.
Oh,
there.
For sure. I mean, Drew, for sure top five. I guess you're talking about who.
No, I'm talking like defenseman one through five there. I mean, you know, there's no weakness there. I mean, Chris Russell's, what, your sixth there?
Well, Russell's better than Weidman. I think.
Well, Weidman was so good in the playoffs.
Weidman was good. I think Russell's better.
Well, so it's a good problem to have when you're talking about,
well,
you know.
And again, Weidman's a more offense-oriented defenseman, whereas Chris Russell's like your Mark Stewart, stay-at-home, blocks shots, does everything.
He moves the puck too, has he?
Yeah. But, I mean, you look at Weidman's offensive totals, and, I mean, it's clear that that's the strength of his game as opposed to Chris Russell. So
good problems to have, right?
Yeah, it's good problems to have. If you're looking at moving a guy like Ladislav Smead, who might not be a top four guy necessarily on a better team, but he'd be a really good third pairing guy on a really good team and possibly a second pairing guy, very solid defensively. But the point being that Calgary's defense is arguably the best in the NHL right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to do a whip around the entire Central Division for the rest of the show, talk about the trades and the signings made by the Winnipeg Jets rivals in the Central. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
The shirt I'm currently wearing is actually from Royal.
You know, is that your shirt? Is it LNG? Is that what that is?
LRG.
LRG.
Lifted Research Group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that like a skateboarder shirt
or
something?
Happy you're wearing
a
shirt.
I mean, I'd call it kind of more like hip hop, like urban clothing, if you want to call it that. I really like this label. They have a lot of great stuff at Royal. More importantly, I love this color, orange. It's really summery, you know?
Yeah, it's a nice shirt. I got no problems with it.
Yeah. Okay. I've always liked orange.
Yeah, we got to give a shout-out, Ezzy. You're actually derelict in your duty to give a shout-out. Sad Sack Jets fan. We met him at the Bomber game on
super nice guy.
Thursday. Great time at the Bomber game. Nice of a lot of people came up, and Ezzy knew them via their Twitter handles more than, you know, as real people. But nice to meet them, and everybody was real friendly.
It was really weird. Ezzy wore a shirt to the Bomber game that said Ezzy from Illegal Curve.
Yeah, he wanted to make sure people knew who he was.
Like, how much more attention does the guy need? I mean,
he's obviously he likes to have notoriety. So I got to give him a shout out. And the Beer Snake was terrific at the Bomber game on Thursday. Went the entire section, apparently, because the game wasn't very good. The beer was quite delicious.
Well, the Beer Snake was phenomenal. I mean, a couple of people were hit with beer cups, and it was ended at the old Winnipeg Stadium. But those guys obviously have the hashtag Church of Beer Snake going. Mm-hmm. And it was super fun. I know the Bombers lost on Thursday night, but it was still a really fun game. And it's only one game.
That's right. not time to push the panic button. Let's get to the Central Division roundup. We start with the Chicago Blackhawks, where they, you know, they said all offseason they said that they were going to have to they're going to re-sign Brandon Saad. There's no chance that they were going to lose out on Brandon Saad. Brandon Saad's a key member of our team. Well, lo and behold, he gets traded to the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange of the big pieces, really Artem Anisimov and Marco Dano. And then the Blackhawks go ahead and they sign Anisimov to a contract extension, 5 years, $22.75 million, a salary cap hit of $4.55 million for Anisimov. Your thoughts on Anisimov being a key member of the Chicago Blackhawks core going forward?
You know, Richie, I gotta say, I don't mind that trade that much for Chicago. And I mean, they lose the better player here. I really like Brandon Saad, and we were talking to Mike Colligan a couple segments ago. Pittsburgh. He's from Pittsburgh, and he's a guy that Pittsburgh may have been interested. You hear reports, may or may not. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they went and got Phil Kessel, Rich. But Brandon Saad's a guy that, you know, second round pick in 2011, got lots of speed, and he's got some grit to his game that I really like. He goes in and gets the puck, and he goes to those spots, and I thought he complimented whoever he played with. They kind of, you know, he wasn't really on the third and fourth line a lot, but whether he was playing with Taves or Kane, he was really good in the playoffs. And Artem Anisimov, I really like. He's an underrated player, Rich. He was really good on the Rangers, and he was a valuable player on the Columbus Blue Jackets. Obviously, this year was a complete disaster in Columbus with all the injuries. Columbus is a really good team, and I think they're only getting better. And you look at Brandon Saad, and I don't really fault Stan Bowman because he was asking for a lot at his age. And when you have so many players under contract for so much money, so you're talking Taves, you're talking Kane, you're talking, well, right now, Patrick Sharp and Keith and all these guys, and Corey Crawford even, you want to throw him in there. I mean, they have a lot of guys making $5 million plus per year, right, Rich? So I don't have a problem with it. And I look at Chicago, and even though Brandon Saad was a big piece, you've got Artem Anisimov up the middle there. And you know, so I think the Chicago is going to be fine.
Do you want Anisimov at a cap hit of 4.55 at 27 years old, or Saad at a cap hit of 6 at 22 years old?
Well, you know, it's a fair question you pose there, Richie, and I think, you know, For the difference of just under $1.5 million, because that's what Saad signs for. He signs for the 6 years, $36 million in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
For under $1.5 million, which isn't a huge, you know, difference in money, I'd probably rather have Saad and figure out how you make it work.
Well, it's clear they wanted Saad. I mean, if it was between the two, Rich, you'd take Saad because of his age, and because of his offensive upside. But
so then, why make the move?
Well, because they couldn't sign him.
But why couldn't
they? They tried to.
But, you know, if he's willing to take 6 and 36 from Columbus and Chicago puts 6 and 36 on the table.
You'd assume he would have taken it from Chicago.
Yeah, you'd assume he would. It's not like
he
wanted out.
Well, that wasn't the offer, though. It was less.
Right. But once they, you know, so, I mean, you know,
My question, maybe, as yeah, that's, I don't know what happened there. You hear certain things, but the Anisimov...
Like he wanted too much money. I think it's pretty simple.
But the Anisimov contract was pretty, I mean, they signed him for 5 years. At 22.7.
That's $1.5 million less.
Right, but for that million,
I appreciate that. But is that for a guy 5 years older with less offensive skill? I mean, Anisimov can score. He's a big boy. He's going to help second line center depth for sure. They got Panarin coming in there. They signed Tikhonov. I mean, there's a Russian element for sure. All that, I get it. But Brandon Saad, I mean, scoring wingers. I mean, Hossa's getting older. Still a very good player. And I realize you want to build through the middle, but, I mean, the Hawks have been that one exception of having no second-line center. I mean, Brad Richards aside and Dave Bolin aside, if you want to call them both second-line centers, and you could argue they certainly weren't when they won those cups. And the three cups, they haven't even had one. So suddenly they're going to address it? I mean, I understand it, but you're giving away a big piece here. Now, I realize there were other parts to this trade. Sure. It wasn't just one for one. I appreciate that.
I think
I'm just surprised if you look at it in terms of those two guys.
Right.
And, again, we have to take into account everybody. The 1.45 difference per year is an odd. It's odd.
It's not a huge amount of money. It is worth noting, though, I think, that this year Anisimov is actually only getting paid $3.2 million. That contract kicks in next year.
I appreciate that.
The new contract. You know, this year the savings are closer to about $2.8 million, and then, you know, you lose Versteeg off the books, you know, after this season and some other things.
Florida's still eating some of his contract anyways. But right. The thing is, Drew, is you add the 3.2 onto that contract, okay? So you have him at $26 million for 6 years.
So $10 million.
Yeah, over 6 years, yeah. Which is about $1.5 million, you know, a little there bit more go. Than $1.5 million. I'd rather have Saad myself.
By the time that contract's up, Saad will be a year older than Nisimov is right now.
Yeah, so it is odd that, you know,
and you know what you got and you know the chemistry you got.
It's one thing if you can get a Nisimov at, say, $3.8 million a year or $4 million a year, then you probably might not be able to make it work. But they paid him Nisimov a fair bit of money and not that much less than Brandon Saad got from the Columbus Blue Jackets. So it is a little curious there with how it all plays out when you look at it in the big, big picture of the trade.
Well, right, and again, to be clear, Brandon Saad admitted himself that he was a little bit surprised to be traded, and I think the number one plan, Rich, was to re-sign him.
They were scared of an offer sheet, too.
And that's true, because he's not a UFA, right? 22 years old, he's an RFA. So I think that it comes down to he wanted a little bit too much term and money, and the Chicago Blackhawks are in a cap crunch, right? So that, I think those are the factors that really led to him being traded. And so Anisimov, older, and, you know, I like Anisimov. He's not necessarily going to be a 70-point guy, but he's a solid center. Sure. He's going to get you 40, 45 points. And then you get, you know, Jeremy Moore and Corey Trop. I mean, those guys are depth players. At this point in their careers, more AHL guys. And then a guy like Marco Dano, a first-round pick of Columbus. So you hope that he turns out. As you mentioned, Rich, they've went out and they brought back Victor Tikhonov and Panarin.
Yeah.
So they're hoping that those guys kind of complement and replace guys like Versteeg and some of the other players that they've lost over the years. So I still think, though, the core of this team is still there, right? Like, you've still got Taves, you still got Kane, you still got Keith Seabrook. So mm-hmm. I still think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the West.
They got to get rid of Sharp, and they got to get rid of Bickle's contracts as quickly as possible. And they, you know,
but if you end up doing that, then I really don't get it.
I don't think both of those players are moving, Rich. I think they've tried to move Bickle, and I think they've tried to move Sharp, but
they're asking a lot in return for Sharp still. Apparently,
well, the other
Sharp's a good player.
Bickle has such a bad playoffs that it really is hindering his value.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of money,
and yeah. Sharp didn't have a great year either.
Still a lot of moving pieces there as well. I mean, they only have four defensemen under contract.
Well, I mean, yeah, they do. Now, granted, Drew, you bring up Trevor Van Riemsdyk. He's under contract. You put him in the top five. You deal with that, and you can make a move in season with injuries and such.
Yeah.
So you got another spot you got to fill.
And they get Andrew Desjardins back under contract for $800,000 a year. He's your fourth-line center.
I believe Kruger's still unsigned, too.
Yeah, that's the other one.
He is. That's correct as well. And we, you know, we've spoken to people on the show who say that Kruger's a key element on that team.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, but we've watched him. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, Desjardins, Kruger, these guys aren't going to tear it up. You're not going to see their names on the score sheet, but they were key players. Hey, if you're playing a night in, night out basis on the Stanley Cup winning team, you know, I look back to, you know, the days of John Madden on New Jersey. Solid player. These guys are big parts of the depth. And I agree with Rich. Mm-hmm. If you've traded Saad and then you also trade Sharp and Bickle, I mean, these are guys that have helped you win the cups over the years. These are key players. And, you know, you're going to have to replace those guys and hope that you fill those needs.
The other thing is, as he Bickle's 29, Sharp's 33, you just traded Saz 22. I mean, you're getting older. Look at that roster again, guys. We're nitpicking here. This is the best team in the league again. They're getting a little older here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know,
they
you
got the young guys coming.
You throw
you
in Teravainen. Yeah.
I mean, Marco Dano's only 20. Yeah, you got Andrew Shaw, who's 23. I mean, they're getting a little bit older, but they're not getting significantly older.
Their back end is all average of over 30. Their goalie is over 30. That's less of an issue with the goaltenders. Mm-hmm. I mean, Taves and Kane, obviously, they're 27, 26. But they're getting a little older. I this move didn't necessarily make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, their window might be closing in the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at some other teams in the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by our friends at Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com.
Richie, what Bruce song is this?
You just put me on the spot there. This is off the new album. Oh, God, I sound like an idiot. This is off the...
No, I'm the idiot. That's why I'm asking you, because I never know what song it is.
High Hopes. This is...
It's off the album that he toured for that we went to see in Minneapolis.
Donnie, I don't even want to... Oh, this is Wrecking Ball.
That's right.
And the album's Wrecking Ball.
That's right. You're two for two.
I said it before. Richie converted me into a Bruce fan. When we went to that concert.
That was terrible. How long did it take me to get that?
That's
it was
really
about Giant Stadium. He wrote the song about Giant Stadium.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
That makes sense because it was undergoing the Wrecking Ball.
Yeah.
That's right. And it was so he performed at the last night of the Giant Stadium because he played the last show there.
Sure.
And they tore it down after.
Yeah. If you weren't a Bruce fan, if you see his live show. Like, if you see his live show, Rich, you can't not be a fan.
Well, you went to the Stones last week, Richie.
So, yeah, the Stones. So, I've seen Bruce twice. So
how's Keith doing?
Well, Keith had
better than you.
Keith had a great line. He said, you know, it's great to be here. And then he paused. He goes, it's great to be anywhere.
It's true. I mean, the odds of him still being anywhere are, you know. Anyways, yeah. You said they were in good form still.
They were incredible. Mick Jagger, I'm not exaggerating. Mick Jagger sounded like he was 30 years old. He was dancing around the stage for the entire two and a half hours, three hours, whatever it was. The energy was incredible, and the band was amazing. I mean, it was one of the best shows I've ever seen.
St. Louis Blues, they made a trade a couple days ago. They shipped out. We knew there were going to be some changes to their core. It
took me a long time to get the Wrecking Ball. That was embarrassing.
That was a little bit embarrassing. The St. Louis Blues, we knew there were going to be some changes to the core after another playoff meltdown. They trade TJ Oshie to the Washington Capitals in exchange for Troy Brower, another goaltender named Phoenix Copley, and a 2016 third-round pick.
Yep.
Yesterday, they signed RFA goaltender Jake Allen to a two-year, $4.7 million contract, salary cap hit of $2.35 million. And then a couple days ago, they re-signed Yori Laterra forward to a three-year, $14.1 million contract with an average annual value of $4.7 million per season.
Yep.
Start with the TJ Oshie to Washington trade.
Yeah, Richie, former UND boy, of course.
Yeah.
I really like that trade for Washington. I like what Washington's done. I know we don't have enough time here, Drew, today to go over every single team's
move.
We'll
do that in weeks to come.
Yeah, there was 100 of them. But, you know, they went out and they signed Justin Williams, a UFA, a guy who, you know, he won the Conn Smythe Trophy 2 years ago for the LA Kings. He might be getting a little bit older. But to me, this is exactly what the Washington Capitals need. They're complementing skill, and it's giving them more options, Rich. TJ Oshie's a guy who, if you've watched him play, and we've watched him play a lot here in Winnipeg in the Central Division, this is a guy that's got tons of skill, and he's gritty, and he's tough. You remember those battles Mark Stewart and TJ Oshie had in front of the net?
Mm-hmm.
He's a tough guy to play against. He's a small guy by today's NHL standards, but I've always been a big TJ Oshie fan. Now, Troy Brower is a good hockey player. Troy Brower is a 20-goal guy, a veteran guy in the NHL. I think that TJ Oshie straight up is a better player than Troy Brower. He's obviously younger.
I agree with that.
But you're throwing in a draft pick, Rich, and Phoenix Copley.
Third-round pick.
Exactly. We don't know a lot about Phoenix Copley. I don't want to speak too much about him because I haven't seen him play. You know, we'd have to ask somebody from that covers the Capitals to tell us about him.
Yeah,
but
the Hershey Bears.
Right. So, I mean, I like that move for Washington because Ovechkin.
Aren't they trying to win now, though? Like, does
exactly.
That really matter, that goalie?
No.
Like,
but it's a big year.
Why
you
do
know,
you need another goaltender in well, St.
Maybe
Louis?
He's good,
well,
but
it's
yeah.
Just, to me, it's, you know, get the cupboard stocked with goalie prospects. But,
and Oshie's under contract for an extra year.
Yeah. So, Rich, to me, this is, you know, I think Washington, I was a little bit wrong on Washington this year. I think Washington, to me, you want to talk about contenders, I think they're an absolute contender in the East, and they turned out to be a contender in the East this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Look at St. Louis. This is a big year for St. Louis. I mean, Ken Hitchcock's only under contract for one year.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this group, I mean, it's led by David Backes, it's led by Alex Steen, it's led by other guys. You know, TJ Oshie, you've moved him out and brought in a guy who obviously has had some success over the years with Washington. But this is a big year because you've got a team here that has so much talent, but they've yet to take that regular season success into the playoffs. And it's every year. They're out in the first round, out mm-hmm. in the second round. So to me, the St. Louis Blues, I don't know how much better they've gotten with the moves they've made. I mean, Yori Laterra came over last year from the KHL. He was a good player. But again, I mean, Vladimir Tarasenko had an awesome year. He's a top player. But they've never translated that. And, I mean, you've got a great group of defensemen and, you know, Jake Allen, Brian Elliott. And, I mean, they're still going to probably have a 1A, 1B goalie situation there. I just don't know.
That's worked well.
I don't know, Rich, when you get into the playoffs, if the St. Louis Blues are still going to be competitive with the likes of the Chicago Blackhawks or, you know, even LA Kings.
Team's getting a little older, too. I mean, you have, of course, your core guys, your core youngsters, and Tarasenko who need to get signed. That's priority. And Jaden Schwartz is going to command big money after that.
Mm-hmm.
But
both 23.
Yeah, but some of the other guys you're relying on, the 30-year-old guys, again, you know, it's I just don't know what direction they're going here. I mean, I think what you get with Brower is you get a little bit of a different player. I know she's not a great skater, but he's really skilled. Really good offensive game, good stick handler, and he'll battle. Brower's a little more of a shooter. And that obviously was a nice compliment to the likes of Backstrom and Ovechkin on the power play and be able to get in shooting positions. And, you know, Stasny and Steen, those guys can pass, so it'd be interesting to see if he mixes. But he's a year less on his contract. I don't think he's as talented. And the other assets, notwithstanding the fact that I don't really know a lot about the goaltending prospect, and that's a factor here.
He had a good year in with Hershey last year.
It seems like a kind of an odd move, because if he gets that opportunity, what are you doing with your son Jake Allen to the two-year deal? Is Brian Elliott on the way out? Which I'd be fine with, by the way. But they just don't see, they seem to be kind of moving. Like, the Stasny signing last year didn't seem like it was a fit, really. And it wasn't a fit the first year, at least. They said they expect more from him now. They didn't bring in a goalie. Now they're moving in. It's kind of like the Perron deal. The Perron deal never made sense to me in that they traded him to Edmonton for Pjärvi in, what, a second?
Mm-hmm.
And Pjärvi never really was a guy I thought could make a difference.
Then Pittsburgh gave up a first-rounder to get
Perron. Right, but I mean, as he at least scores. Like, it just seems like an odd move here. Like, what's the purpose? Is there a locker room thing? I don't know. And Hitchcock would rely on Oshie. It wasn't like he wouldn't rely on him.
You lose some grit, Richie, with Perron and Oshie. Well, they gave a certain element of grit.
Brower's got grit.
Brower has grit, but I'm just saying, like, you know, seems to, you're right, Brower does have that physical element to the game. He's a big guy. He'll get in there on the forecheck. But there's something, yeah, there. Oshie and Perron, both guys seem to be, they wanted to move. It's almost like they initiated them leaving.
Yeah, it is a little bit odd. And we had heard Oshie's name out there for a while. And certainly a guy with, I think, Washington's done a nice job there. What about the Laterra contract? I mean, Laterra is a nice compliment to Jaden Schwartz last year on his line. He gets in the corners, you know, he kind of gets out of his own way. He can, you know, he can dig, he works hard to move the puck a little bit. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. He's not a natural talent, though. So you lock in 4.7 again for him after next season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't you kind of see what, you know, and I guess he's comes up on a pending UFA contract.
Didn't do much in the playoffs.
Lock him up, yeah, but he's not Nobody that offensively did. Gifted. So, you know, he's up the middle, and I know they're trying to trade Patrick Berglund. I guess the question is, what are they doing? I mean, you have a bunch of talent, but how does it complement each? How do they complement each other?
That's what I'm saying, Rich. I still think when you look at the two teams that went to the Western Conference Finals, that's what I meant to say. I didn't mean Kings,
because
the Kings have some problems right now. I meant to say Blackhawks and Ducks. To me, the Blackhawks and Ducks are much more well-rounded teams, and they have, not only do they have stability on the back end, not that the St. Louis Blues don't, but they have stability in net, and they have more of a well-rounded forward group. I still think St. Louis is still trying to put puzzle pieces in and try to figure out what they want to do. Do they want to be a skilled team? Do they want to kind of be a mix of a skilled team? Because as we know, Ken Hitchcock wants guys to be defensively responsible, and Troy Brower is, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it seems like they're always trying to move a guy out and bring a guy in. And there seems to be, as Richie said,
rearranging the deck chairs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario in St. Louis. We'll see how it unfolds throughout the course of the season. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good show, Drew.
TSN 1290. Good show to you too, Ezzy. Big thank you to our guests, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, and our good friend Mike Colligan, Penguins correspondent. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Corey behind the glass, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Blue Jays Baseball on TSN 1290 coming up a little bit later this afternoon.